So I too would like to welcome you to this time together. I always look forward to being on retreat, both doing my own practice in silence, but also sharing a retreat space with others, because it's pretty clear that in some ways we all have a common intention, and we choose to fulfill our aspiration in this way. And for a period of time, we become a community, as Nancy was mentioning, kind of all serving each other in order to accomplish something that's much greater than any one of us could ever do alone. And so I really feel the power of the connecting and the power of the sharing of our energy and intention, and how that benefits one another. Without you, we wouldn't be here. And since I so enjoy the Dharma and appreciate the Dharma, I want to thank you for choosing to spend your next week in this way. And I know there are many people, as Kamala and Nancy mentioned, who are responsible in some way for us being able to be here. I know I've corresponded with several people in order to set this up and to get here that aren't here, and I can't really even remember their names, but I want to thank them for making the effort to invite us and to get us here and to take care of the innumerable details that's required in order to pull it off. Just because we come together at this time for a period of time says a lot about our aspiration, our intention, our commitment, our understanding. But I want to review a little bit and try to articulate what I feel is the underlying commonality of our being here. There are, of course, the obvious differences. We live in different places, we have different jobs, we have different age, health conditions, life conditions are very different for us, but there's so much that we have in common that we're going to be recognizing and developing that it sometimes is helpful to hear it as a way of beginning to dissolve the apparent differences between us and to strengthen the threads of the tapestry of this community. Because in a way, we all bring our own energy, our understanding, our curiosity, our questions, our doubt, our fear. And we bring it, and we just weave it into our practice, or it is woven into our practice, and out of that comes, in the end, liberation. So I want to speak about that a little bit tonight. It was, kind of happy to hear Nancy say, well, we are in this one section of this larger piece of land. There's a whole educational facility here, and we're in this one little section called, you know, the hostel part over here. And while the staff do their best to protect us, they can't possibly do it. Because We cannot isolate ourselves from the conditions of life. It's just not possible. And while sometimes we do go on retreats that are silent, that are quiet, that are slow, that are remote, inevitably we have to come back to the rest of our life, which is often not that. It's busy, it's full, it's noisy, it's unpredictable. There's unwanted, uninvited, and sometimes unpleasant contact forced upon our minds, on our bodies, on our hearts. And that's life. And so being here is just a kind of a subset of what we're going to experience in the rest of our life. And it's interesting that in Burma, where this practice that we'll be teaching from comes from, the kind of the grandfather or the grandmother tradition, they have an understanding there that is interesting. They prefer to hold retreats in kinds of noisy, busy, distracting places, because you know you have to really work hard to kind of keep your mind together, to be able to kind of pay attention to what's going on. And the corollary of that is, if you go off to a nice, quiet, remote, solitude, silent place, mostly you'll just space out or fall asleep in the beginning of practice. It's really hard. So they're quite happy to have you practicing in areas where it's noisy and there's traffic and people talking and there's things going on and, you know, all kinds of things that could be a distraction. But it's only our belief that, oh, this is distracting, that makes it a problem. Other than that, it's just sights and sounds and smells and, you know, activity to pay, something to pay attention to. If you think it's a distraction, that's a problem. If you understand, oh, this is just something that you're aware of, no problem. And so being here, I know many of you have practiced with us in quieter, less distracting places. But I guess my understanding has changed that, you know, what we might think of as distracting is good. You know, more recently, in the last couple of years, I've been going to Burma to practice at a center that is, it is really not quiet. There are chickens and dogs and people and traffic and loudspeakers. In Burma, you know, in the villages, the power's off most of the time, but everybody has a generator, and at the local little cappuccino shop or the whatever it is, they'll run the generator and they'll blare Burmese opera over loudspeakers for everybody within a half mile to hear. And so in the monastery, you're sitting there and there's one karaoke over here and there's a Burmese opera over there and there's a monk over there and there's a whole nunnery of nuns chanting back there, and they're all coming over loudspeakers while the generator in the monastery is generating electricity in order to run the water pumps that are thumping away, pumping water into tanks, which is splashing water. And you're sitting there in this cacophonous, chaotic, you know, totally overwhelming space, trying to be okay with it all. And as crazy as it sounds, and as kind of distracting as it could be, you know, it's really okay. If you can understand that it's okay. If you can be with, well, this is the way it is right now. And so this willingness to be with, well, this is the way it is right now, is really what our practice is all about. Seeing if we can just open to and acknowledge, this is the way it is. This is the way it is in my body. This is the way it is in the mind. This is the way it is in the environment. This is the way it is with other people. This is just the way it is. So sometimes we have this kind of hidden assumption in our practice that practice is about becoming a certain way. I've got to become mindful. I've got to become calm. I've got to become aware. I've got to become non-reactive. I've got to calm down, quiet down. And that hidden assumption will cause you a lot of suffering. But if you can kind of recalibrate your understanding of practice and understanding of what awareness is all about, it's just being willing to acknowledge, oh, this is the way it is right now. And often the way it is not what you prefer. It's not what you want. It's not what you choose. It's not even what you've been told meditation is like. Nevertheless, that's the way it is for now. And so really what we're working with is two qualities in our practice. And that is to be able to acknowledge, oh, this is the way it is right now. That's hard enough. And secondly, is to see if you can be okay with that. Once you can open to, this is the way it is, can you be at ease with that? Can you be okay with it? Can you find a way to accept, well, this is the way it is for now? And that's really what practice is about. It's not about trying to make it different than that. And if it's unpleasant and you're upset, well, that's the way it is. Can you be okay with that? Can you be okay with being upset? Can you be okay with being struggling? Can you be okay with it's not the way you want it to be? Well, this is, you know, sometimes when we hear people talk about meditation, you know, the goal or the aspiration or the experience sounds pretty lofty, pretty whatever, pretty unlike the rest of my life. And while there are experiences and there is terrain on the spiritual path that is pretty exotic or subtle, exciting, ecstatic, there's some of that terrain. And if you pay attention long enough and carefully enough, you'll come across that terrain too. But a lot of the terrain of our life and of our heart and of our mind is pretty ordinary stuff. It's pretty ordinary, pretty mundane. It's pretty just normal, average, ordinary, physical, mental, emotional, environmental stuff. In fact, it's so common and so mundane, we take it for granted, we don't pay attention to it, we don't give it any special attention. That's the problem. We may be looking for something so refined or so spiritual or so special that we miss the present moment much of the time. So really what the instruction we'll be offering and the guidance we'll be giving is trying to point to is what's going on right now. What is the experience of this moment? Can you recognize it? And can you be at ease with that? And it's often very ordinary. Nothing special. But being aware of it with some continuity makes for a pretty special experience. An experience of being, learning and cultivating, being at ease with the way things are. And not demanding of life that things be different. Or expecting life to provide something else other than just the way it is for now. This capacity to acknowledge the way things are in this moment is really all that the Buddha perfected. That's what the Buddha is, or that's what being a Buddha means, is one who is awake, one who is aware, one who's able to acknowledge this is the way it is for now. Well, that, for all of the greatness of the Buddha and all of the beautiful qualities of mind of being awake and aware and free, liberated, it all hinges on, can we acknowledge the way it is for us right now? And the way it is for us right now is really not always something we can control. This moment comes to us due to many causes and conditions which we often don't know where they come from or how they happen to be that way, why they are that way, or what we did to make it that way. So much of what happens to us is, well, we could almost say it's just random. Things happen. The external or the environmental weather changes, the internal weather changes, you know, other people's weather changes, and we're just there to experience it. Can we acknowledge, oh, this is the way it is right now? And can we be at ease with that? This being able to acknowledge the way things are is what I call taking refuge in the Buddha. Taking refuge in the capacity to be awake, the capacity to be aware, the capacity to know this moment's experience. And when we come on retreat like this, I like to emphasize, or I like to remind us all that that's what it's about, is acknowledging what we're awake to in this moment. It can be our inner life, our outer life, our communal life, our physical body, our emotional body. It can be anything. That's what we're aware of. That's the way it is, of course. Can we acknowledge that? That's taking refuge in the Buddha. That's all the Buddha really, or that's what the Buddha did. It learned how to do that on an ongoing basis. And in the course of time, of course, covering the whole spectrum of what life offers. So much of our life is spent in routine, habit, the familiar, the expected. And we just kind of go through life in a little groove. And we experience just a small range of what it is possible to experience as a human being. But if we just quietly pay attention and just be willing to acknowledge this is the way it is, gradually the range of what we're aware of, what we awake to, what we are able to acknowledge, grows. And in this growing or expanding capacity, it's where we'll be challenged. It's where we'll have to grow in our tolerance of the unpleasant, the letting go of our preferences, the coming out of denying our limitations, getting more honest about our strengths. And these are challenges. But this is how we grow, is to come to know ourselves more intimately. All of what can be experienced as a human being. So this is the what I call a taking refuge in the Buddha. When we come here, we remind ourselves that we're taking refuge in the Buddha. We're taking refuge in the capacity to be awake, to be aware, to acknowledge this present moment. So whatever you experience, pleasant or unpleasant, familiar or novel, subtle or gross, is okay. It's all okay. Often our conditioning doesn't encourage us to consider it okay. You know, we prefer pleasant over unpleasant. We'd all much rather experience pleasant physical sensations and pleasant emotions than unpleasant physical sensations and unpleasant emotions. But nevertheless, the unpleasant comes. Can we be as at ease with that as we are with the pleasant? That's our challenge. That's where we have room to grow, really. So this taking refuge in the Buddha is really reminding ourselves to try to acknowledge the full range of what's being experienced. Taking refuge in the Dharma is to acknowledge the full range of experience, because the Dharma is the way things are, the way it is for us. It's the nature of the mind. It's the nature of the body. It's the nature of communal life. It's the nature of the environment. It's the nature of everything we experience is natural. It's a natural experience. It's the way it is in a human body. It's the way it is in a human heart. It's the way it is in a human mind. It's the way it is in human interaction, communal interaction. It's the way it is as a human on earth experiencing the environment. It's all natural. It's not like has to get better or there's something wrong with it. This is just the way it is. Well, this is the Dharma. So when we take refuge in the Dharma, we're opening to the way things are and not judging it as being wrong or bad or that it shouldn't be happening. But just acknowledge, oh, this is in the nature of the body. It's in the nature of the body to feel this way. It's in the nature of the heart to feel this way. It's in the nature of the mind to act like this. It's in the nature of our interaction with one another to experience sadness and loss and grief and challenge and frustration and disappointment. It's all natural. Can we be at ease with it, though? That's the challenge. That's our practice. Can we be at ease with conditions which are tend to frustrate us or disappoint us or cause us to be sad or cause us to be confused or unhappy? These are all natural human experiences. If you're not experiencing any of them in your meditation, you're not meditating right. Of course, I know you all will experience them. They come. If you're open, you'll see this is the way it is. So taking refuge in the Dharma is just reminding ourselves to accept this is the way it is. And I add this phrase for now because often it's difficult to open to experience that's unpleasant if we think this is the way it's going to be forever. And it never is. It's never that way forever. And so to add the phrase, well, this is the way it is for now, can encourage you to open to, okay, if it's not going to be this way forever, I can handle it. And we can handle a moment or two or five of even the most intense and unpleasant experience if we know or if we can remember that it won't be this way forever. It's when we assume or we believe or we imagine or we just have this vague sensation it's going to be this way forever, it becomes overwhelming and unbearable. And we run, we deny, we avoid, we minimize, we distract ourselves from that. And so practice is to recognize when we're eternalizing something unconsciously, because then it's overwhelming. And so to take refuge in the Dharma is really to remind ourselves this is natural for now. And taking refuge in the Sangha, another mainstay of our being here, involves several components. One is, as Nancy mentioned, we are a community. We may identify with this community of 30 people who are here on retreat, but we are just a part of a larger community of everyone who comes to this center, which is just a part of a much larger community of humanity, if you will. So in one sense, we can see ourselves or remind ourselves that we have a common aspiration. We have a common purpose in being here. And not to make much of the differences, but rather to see the commonality. But at a deeper level, when we take refuge in the Sangha or take refuge in the community, we are acknowledging that what we are aspiring to, the goodness or the greatness that Nancy mentioned that comes from this activity is something that's been of value and practiced for thousands of years. And by our being here and making the effort, we join that community of beings who appreciate openness, honesty, integrity, truthfulness, awareness, liberation, compassion. And we do it with full awareness that that's what we value, that's what we care about, and that's what we're cultivating in our own hearts. There are those among us, there have been those throughout history who have developed these qualities of a good human being to an extraordinary degree. Whether it's patience, loving kindness, generosity, learning how to live in harmony, balance of mind, all of those qualities that we recognize in any good human being, there are those among us who have developed them to extraordinary degrees and have led exemplary lives for us to learn from. And our being here is supported by them, by the memory of them, the recognition of them, the acknowledgement of their efforts, their understanding, their accomplishments. So when we find ourselves in kind of bogged down in our own limited worldview, if we can remember that the work we're doing is the work that all great beings have had to do in order to become great, in order to be awake, in order to be wise, compassionate, generous, understanding. They've had to go through everything that we'll have to go through. No different. It's not like they had it and we don't, or they got it and we don't. This is what they too had to go through. The knee pain, the back pain, the restlessness, the sleepiness, the struggle, the frustration, the disappointment, the willingness to be distracted and not wanting to get up at 5:30 in the morning. Anyone who's ever awoken has had to go through all that too. And so when we take refuge in the Sangha, it's kind of recognizing that what we're doing is just following in the footsteps of those who have really become great. Taking refuge in the Buddha, or the capacity to awaken, the Dharma, or the way things are, the Sangha, or the community of those who practice, these can be powerful reflections to support our being here. It's helpful to remember them. So each morning at the sitting before breakfast at 6 o'clock, we will chant the refuges and precepts again. As a way of enchanting the refuges, it's a way of recommitting our energy of the day or for the day to our highest aspiration, to awaken to the truth and to connect with the community of others that are on the path of awakening. The precepts are, as many of you know, these are the minimum community agreements for living in harmony. To not harm by killing, stealing, acting out sexual energy in a way that causes harm, speaking the truth, and not using intoxicants. These, if we can, to the extent that we can undertake them as trainings for our own mind, they will allow us to live in harmony with one another, to not live in fear of others, to not live in suspicion of others, to not live in isolation from others, but to really understand that we have this common commitment to support living in harmony with one another. We are part of a larger community here, and maybe not everyone who comes here has taken those precepts. So we do have to protect ourselves, of course. We're not going to be foolish, but nevertheless, within the community of us here, to have a common understanding of each other can be a powerful support practice. So as a way of formally opening the retreat or beginning the retreat, I'd like to lead us all in the taking of the refuges and precepts. You'll notice on the chanting sheet that I have listed the 8 precepts. And normally, or traditionally on a retreat like this, we'll all take 5 precepts. But in some traditions, and some people like to take additional 3 precepts. The first 5 precepts are the precepts that allow us to really live in harmony together, because we've made a commitment not to harm one another. The additional 3 precepts are not so much supporting harmony in the community, but they're an additional practice of renunciation. And they involve, with the 6 precepts, not eating solid food after the noontime meal, which in this case would be to refrain from eating in the evening meal, but just having liquid. The 7th precept is to refrain from singing, dancing, adorning the body, using anything to beautify the body or to entertain the mind. Not much chance of that here. There's no movies, there's no dancing. But you can consider how you might just undertake a practice of less entertaining of the mind, whether it's reading or distracting yourself and not adorning the body, however you might do that, not wearing jewelry or something like that. And the 8th precept is to refrain from or practice not seeking comfort, meaning to avoid the use of high and luxurious beds and chairs. Well, I don't know what your bed's like, but not going to be a problem in our cabin. And there are some more comfortable chairs here, and if you wanted to take this precept, you might consider how you would just refrain from just seeking comfort in the use of luxurious or more comfortable chairs or beds. And those are just additional precepts that some people find useful in taking on retreat. I don't encourage it, and I don't discourage it. If you think it would be useful, you're willing to try it for a day or for the retreat. Sometimes it can surprise you how challenging it can be or how unchallenging it might actually be. But it's up to each one of you to decide. But just for a show of hands for the cook who will be cooking the evening meal, are there any of you here who know you'll be taking the 8 precepts most of the retreat? Okay. 1. Okay. So when I lead the precepts, refuges and precepts tonight, and in the morning, we won't do the 8 precepts, we'll just do the 5. And you who wish can just take the additional 3 precepts on your own. Okay? So what we'll do is I will chant a word or a phrase in Pali, that's the language on the left, which is the language that the Buddha's teachings are written down in. And you can repeat after me. And in a way, it's interesting to remember or to recall or to remind ourselves that there are hundreds of thousands of people taking the refuges and precepts every day. millions probably, for the last 2,500 years. That's a lot of people who've made the commitment to live in this way in order to develop their heart. And our taking the refuges and precepts is support for them, and their taking of the refuges and precepts is support for us. We're not alone in this endeavor. We join a large community of very sincere and dedicated practitioners by taking these refuges and precepts. And then the last phrase of the chanting is an acknowledgement of our aspiration. May my efforts to practice the refuges and precepts in this way, may my efforts to practice in this way support awakening of the heart or liberation of the heart. It's just putting into words our aspiration for undertaking these refuges and precepts. Okay? So, please repeat after me. Namo, namo, tassa bhagavato, tassa bhagavato, arahato, arahato, samma sambuddhassa, samma sambuddhassa. Namo, namo, tassa bhagavato, tassa bhagavato, arahato, arahato, samma sambuddhassa, samma sambuddhassa. Namo, namo, tassa bhagavato, tassa bhagavato, arahato, arahato, samma sambuddhassa, samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Anatipata, anatipata, viramani, viramani, sikkhapadaṃ, sikkhapadaṃ, samādhiyāmi, samādhiyāmi, adinādāna, adinādāna, viramani, viramani, sikkhapadaṃ, sikkhapadaṃ, samādhiyāmi, samādhiyāmi, abrahmacharya, abrahmacharya, viramani, viramani, sikkhapadaṃ, sikkhapadaṃ, samādhiyāmi, samādhiyāmi, musāvādā, musāvādā, viramani, viramani, sikkhapadaṃ, sikkhapadaṃ, samādhiyāmi, samādhiyāmi, surāmeraya, surāmeraya, majjhapamādāthāna, majjhapamādāthāna, Vairamani, Vairamani, Sika Badang,
Sika
Badang, Samariyami,
Samariyami,
Idang Me Silang, Idang Me Silang, Magapalanyanasa, Magapalanyanasa, Pachayo, Pachayo, Tu.